You're listening to Sound Effect on KNKX 88.5. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today we're telling stories of royalty. So normally on the radio, we try to keep things pretty clear and concise. So when somebody has a really long title, you know, like Executive Vice President for Strategy of whatever organization, we tend to abbreviate things. But with this next guy, I'm going to go ahead and give you the full version.
It's Most Worshipful Grandmaster Julius W. Brown, Jr.
And what is the abbreviation for that?
Most Worshipful. But Grandmaster Brown or Brother Brown, either of those work.
Brother Brown gets that title because he's a leader in the Freemasons, a worldwide fraternity complete with secret symbols and rituals. It's been around for centuries. Specifically, Brown is the Most Worshipful Grandmaster of the Prince Hall Grand Lodges of Washington, which is a traditionally African-American branch of Freemasonry. They celebrate the legacy of free black men, including a guy named Prince Hall, who went all the way to the King of England to get formal acceptance into the Freemasons. This was back in the days of the Revolutionary War.
They were soldiers. They made them Masons, but they didn't give them the opportunity to create a lodge and make other Masons. So what Prince Hall and the other guys did was they pulled their money together and they chartered a boat to England. And they petitioned the king for a charter, which at that time had to come from the Grand Lodge of England. And until this day, if you're not recognized by the Grand Lodge of England, then we call you bogus.
Julius is from Philadelphia. The army brought him out to the Northwest, and he never left. But he grew up with the Prince Hall Freemasons. They were a huge part of his community, building playgrounds, paying for sports uniforms. His dad, his uncles, all the men he knew were in the organization.
Well, through a kid's eyes, we thought that they were the businessmen who ran the world because they all wore black suits and had briefcases. So, you know, you couldn't tell me that my dad wasn't the mayor of Philadelphia at the time and that the other guys weren't the city council. So to me, it looked established and it gave me that ideology of wanting to be a part of a brotherhood like these guys were.
Do you remember when you first learned about Prince Hall Masonry and what set it apart from other Grand Lodges?
I learned about Prince Hall through my father and my uncles. When I asked my father about it, he told me I wasn't ready to become a Mason.
But how old were you?
21.
Oh, yeah. So you were a full grown-up.
Yeah, I was grown with kids, so my father said I wasn't ready.
You think he was right?
At the time, somewhat, yes. Yes. But I think Masonry grounded me. You know, I'm the baby of five. I've always been the wild child, the one who could, you know, not care about anything because I always had somebody to have my back. And I think Masonry gave me a grounding. It settled me down a lot better than I would have without it.
It sounds like there's a pretty mixed record of Prince Hall Lodges being accepted both by other, you know, white lodges and kind of society a little bit writ large. How has that been here in this region historically?
Washington is one of the leaders in the open door policy. One of the grand masters of the Washington Mainstream Lodge has said that he wanted to open the doors. This was 1920, I think it was, what Grand Lodge of Washington voted on it and said, yes, let's do it. Well, other white Grand Lodges from other states said if they did that, that they would break off ties or what we call not communicate or not recognize you as Masons. So the Grand Lodge out of session, instead of opening doors, they said they put a hold on it for that time. And that Grand Master told them that when he dies, he did not want a Masonic emblem or a Masonic service unless they had open door policy with the African American Prince Hall Grand Lodge. So in other words, it was don't even bury me as a Mason until we recognize our brothers in the Prince Hall Grand Lodge. So we were one of the first leading areas to go in that direction. There are still Grand Lodges in Texas and Alabama who, you know, that'll never happen.
They're still not recognized.
It'll happen one day. It hasn't happened yet.
So who can become a member of the Prince Hall Lodge here in Washington?
Anybody.
Any man?
As long as you're 18 or over.
So could a white man become a member?
Yes, we have plenty of white members. Interesting enough, I had a soldier. He hounded me for about 3 months, and he was white. And his uncle was a Main Street Mason. And he said he had talked to his uncle, and his uncle told him all about the differences between Prince Hall and Main Street. And he decided that he wanted to be Prince Hall. And he hounded me, and I said, are you sure you want to be Prince Hall? He said, yeah. And I asked him why, and he said, because Prince Hall has never discriminated. And I said, wow. So I finally gave him a petition. But I make him work for it, though.
Do you accept gay members?
Yes. Yes, we have no discrimination at all.
Trans members?
We haven't had any. That's a subject that we just discussed at our Conference of Grandmasters. Part of Masonic law is that you, and it's written in our rituals, you have to be a man, freeborn, yada, yada, yada. But we're discussing that because we're in a different time now. So I don't see why we would discriminate on transgender.
So let's talk a little bit more about how it's been part of your life. Can you think of an example, like a story that you can tell of a time in your life, maybe where there was something difficult or whatever, that being a member of the Prince Hall Lodge helped you through something or gave you some insight or was important to you?
Being a Mason has provided me sometimes with the opportunities and assistance that normally I wouldn't have gotten. I've been in places where I missed my flight. I was low in cash. And USO, you know, was overpopulated. And so, you know, I had a guy who was a Mason who recognized my ring, and he bought me dinner, bought me drinks, you know, kind of made me feel comfortable for that time that I had to wait 6 hours for the next flight.
So what's that like when you're out and about and maybe you do need help, like that situation at the airport, or maybe you're just out for whatever reason and you come across a brother that you don't know? What's that connection like?
To me, it's like if we went to the same elementary school, that's a grounding point. So you don't even have to know me. You just know that we went to the same elementary school and we can build from there. It's the same with Masonry. When we kneel at that altar, we take our obligations. We know that every other person that we meet did the same.
I know a lot of fraternal organizations are going through a big demographic and membership crisis. Their membership is aging. It's getting smaller. Young people aren't coming in. Is that something that you guys are experiencing, and how are you dealing with it?
We were experiencing it in huge, huge numbers until Dan Brown's books became movies.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That made a big difference.
Oh, yeah. The Da Vinci Code and the Dan Brown series really turned the corner for us and made young men take notice and say, Masons run the world again, so, which is not true. But I think that whole mystique, it encaptured a lot of the young men and turned it around. But I blame that also on Masons. It's a generational thing. But as I said in our grand session in July, attrition happens to most organizations. It's happened to Masonry before. It's going to happen to Masonry again. But Masonry's been around for over 400 years, and it's going to be here. So I don't necessarily worry about the attrition because I believe those who have it in their heart like I do will always be there, whether it's 20 people in a room or 10.
You talked about when you were about 21 years old telling your father that you were interested in joining a lodge, and he told you that he didn't think you were ready. So can you tell me a little bit more about what it was that you think he meant and how you found yourself being ready in later years to join?
Well, my father knew me best, and he knew that I really didn't have the principles and the understanding of what Masonry was. I think I wanted to do it because he did it, and it looked cool. And a part of being a Mason, when somebody comes to you and say, I want to be a Mason, we go, yeah, sure, and we walk away. My father did that to me. I think it was just because it was the first time I asked. And he knew I was not married. I had two children by my now wife and three children by my now wife. And, you know, he just didn't agree with my lifestyle. So I married my children's mother, cleaned up my lifestyle, stopped running the streets as much as I used to. And I asked my father-in-law to sponsor me. And when I told my father, he was surprised that I had pursued that goal, that I really wanted to be a Mason, and that I wasn't just going to do things to try to please him so that he would sponsor me, that I was going to do whatever it took to become a Mason. And that's what I did.
Was he a little hurt by that? Was he impressed that you went around him?
He was impressed. I'm his namesake.
Well, on that note, Julius Brown is the most worshipful Grand Master of the Prince Hall Grand Lodge of Washington. Thank you so much for inviting me in and for telling me more about Prince Hall Freemasonry.
Thank you.